not agreed to denuclearization, not in the way that we are talking about denuclearization.
Some are saying North Korea never said they would stop their nuclear and missile programs. This is Thursday, the second day of August, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Remember, join us on VOA Asia Facebook. You can hear us live, and we hope you do just that. All of that and much more on today's VOA Asia program. The Trump administration Tuesday called on North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to stand by his commitment to denuclearize after a report on recent satellite imagery that revealed new activity at a factory outside Pyongyang where the North produced its intercontinental ballistic missiles. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo takes part this week in Singapore in a 26-nation Southeast Asian Security Summit at which North Korea is expected to attend. U.S. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert said the North Korean pledge was made during the Singapore summit in June with President Donald Trump.
What we're going on is the commitment that Chairman Kim made to our president, and that is the commitment to denuclearize. And that is something that we certainly anticipate that he will hold up his end of the bargain and his commitment on that. In terms of that specific report, I've seen it. We're all very well aware of that report. That would fall under an intelligence matter, which is just something I'm not going to be able to get into. North Korea will be a participant at the ASEAN meetings. They have been for many years now. We will be in some of the same meetings as North Korean government officials. I certainly can't preclude any interaction taking place, but we have no meetings on the schedule. Nothing is planned. Our sanctions remain in place. They remain firmly in place. As the secretary goes to ASEAN, he will certainly have conversations with his counterparts from other governments about the importance of maintaining those sanctions and keeping sanctions in place.
Some experts say the United States could be looking at the North Korea situation through the wrong prism. I spoke with one of them. Ken Gauss is a longtime North Korea observer as well as an expert on autocratic regimes at the CNA Corporation.
I would be surprised if North Korea wasn't continuing with its defense programs. And the fact that we were able to see them probably means that North Korea allowed us to see them. They have a very good understanding of what we can see and can't see. We've been playing in this cat and mouse game for years with the North Koreans. And so I suspect that this was used as a way of strategic communications on North Korea's part.
And what is their message?
Well, basically, their message is that they have agreed not to test their systems, but they have not agreed to stop completely their missile programs. We don't know about the nuclear program. They have been a little bit cagey about talking about that, but they haven't made any statements about giving up their defense programs, and they see that as their sovereign right as a sovereign nation to continue to work on what they consider part of their deterrent. It also suggests that, that if we were to engage North Korea along the lines of what they would like, which is heading toward a peace regime through a phased process, that potentially that some of this stuff could be put on the trading block in terms of things that they might be willing to part with, at least part of their program, in order to secure security guarantees, economic guarantees, things like that.
In more detail, as far as you can tell, what is it that the North Koreans want to happen? A lot of people before the summit between President Trump and the North Korean leader said that they had always wanted to and still just want to make sure or try to get a non-nuclear presence throughout the entire Korean Peninsula.
Well, that's the theoretical end state, which is denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. That does not mean unilateral North Korean denuclearization, which is what we seem to spell it out in the Western press and what the U.S. administration seems to be talking about. The North Koreans have not signed up for anything like that. They have talked about some sort of theoretical end state of denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula, which would mean that all parties would remove their nuclear weapons or their nuclear guarantees, which could conceivably also include the U.S. extended deterrence to Japan and to Korea, or at least to Korea, South Korea. But they haven't agreed to give up their nuclear program, so that we would, by seeing them continue to work on their defense programs, it makes it very clear that, at least from their interpretation, that they have not agreed to do any such thing.
Do you think that President Trump, in his tweet, when he talked about North Korea no longer being a nuclear threat, was positioning himself for talks or something else?
Well, it's kind of very hard to tell what his tweets meant, but, it could be interpreted in the fact that North Korea is not testing their nuclear program or their missile program, which I think is a huge deal, because as long as they're not testing means they cannot complete the program. And right now they do not have a full-up completed program that would allow them to hit the United States with any confidence with a missile with a nuclear warhead on that missile. And so therefore we have arrested the development of these programs, and as long as they're not testing, then I would say that it is something that, at least for the time being, we have to consider whether this is something that we can live with. If the North Koreans are not testing and are behaving themselves, they're not being provocative in the region, does that put us in a much better and safer position than if we were to go back to where we were in 2016, 2017, when they were actively testing their programs? And, in service of a brinksmanship strategy that conducted provocations in the region and raised tensions on the peninsula and in the region. I think we talked ourselves into thinking that this summit was all about denuclearization, and North Korea kind of let us believe what we were going to believe, and we're kind of where we are now. The North Koreans have not agreed to denuclearization, not in the way that we are talking about denuclearization. Now, if I had to blame anybody for that, I would say we have ourselves to blame, because we talked ourselves into something that wasn't really there. The key issue is the target is wrong here. The target should not be North Korea in denuclearization. And what I would say that we need to be doing is working on a way to flip North Korea in a way that is going to make them less of a wedge issue for China. Because what China's agenda is on the peninsula is to create the conditions that undermine the U.S. presence on the peninsula. And by getting the U.S. off the peninsula, it weakens our position and hold in Asia. So this is a regional strategy, not a Korea-focused strategy. Korea is only part of a piece on the chessboard. And if we can some way undermine or drive wedges between the relationship in China and North Korea, that puts us in a much stronger position.
Ken Goss, thank you so much for being with us on VOA Asia.
Sure thing.
Ken Goss, by the way, is the director of the International Affairs Group, a part of CNA's Center for Strategic Studies. He is that group's senior foreign leadership analyst and has spent the last 20 years developing methodologies for examining leadership dynamics of authoritarian regimes. In particular, he is an internationally respected expert in North Korea. He has written 3 books on North Korean leadership. His latest book is North Korean House of Cards, Leadership Dynamics Under Kim Jong-un. These are among the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. Google declines to confirm reports it plans to launch a censored version of its search engine in China. The Taliban insurgency announced Wednesday it has cleared Afghanistan's northern Khorasan province of Islamic State, claiming residual IS fighters have fled and surrendered to government forces in the area. The head of India's drug regulator told a newspaper India has banned the import of a rabies vaccine from a Chinese manufacturer embroiled in a safety scandal. The U.S. Secretary of State will reportedly urge Southeast Asian countries to keep up North Korea's sanctions pressure. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and at the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The Trump administration is proposing raising tariffs on $200 billion in Chinese imports up to 25% from 10%, turning up the pressure on Beijing in a trade war between the world's two biggest economies. VOA senior White House correspondent Steve Herman joins us. Steve, what are the details as far as you know, and what kind of effect might they have?
Well, what we have learned about this comes from a statement that the U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer has put out, as well as a background call that senior administration officials had with reporters, and a statement from the White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders. And the way that they're characterizing this, that this may be necessary, and that the president has directed to USTR to consider increasing this proposed level of additional duty from 10% to 25%, and that would be applied to a proposed list of products that had been previously announced.
Products such as what, or have they not been detailed, taking into account that this isn't a done deal yet, right?
No, it's not a done deal. This comes amid discussions between Washington and Beijing about having negotiations. So everything is up on the air. From the perspective of those in the administration, what they see is they have to respond to China not doing anything that they've been requesting since this administration came into power 18 months ago. As one senior administration official put it, we have given them many, many opportunities over a year to address our concerns, and we have obviously not seen any movement from them. And in fact, what they have seen is a threat to the United States from China with tariffs that would cover almost 40% of U.S. imports. And of course, what President Trump has been trying to accomplish is to create some balance for this huge trade imbalance that's been in the favor of China for a long, long time with the United States.
Now, China has already struck back even before this news came out, saying that any further tariffs imposed by Washington would be answered immediately, right?
Right. And so what we have is not just tit for tat, but I think, and even as the officials here admit, that China just continues to double down and double down and double down on unfair trading practices, as one official put it in this call. And I don't think there would be many people who would dispute that if we see this additional round, you can call it an all-out trade war.
China's renminbi, their currency, has been devalued, or has at least fallen more than 6% since the middle of June. Some are saying this is being done deliberately. What do you hear about that?
Well, there's a lot of people here who would believe that this is being done deliberately. And senior administration officials were asked whether their action, this proposed raising of the duties from 10% to 25%, is a result of the currency slide. And the official replied, it is important that countries refrain from devaluing currencies for competitive purposes, but that they didn't want to say that this was an action directly caused by that, that there's a whole host of reasons for this proposal to go forward.
Steve Herman is VOA's senior White House correspondent. Never a dull day, eh?
Never a dull day at the White House.
Thanks, Steve.
Sure.
Happening now in Asia, flooding in Myanmar has killed 12 people and forced more than 132,000 others to take shelter at nearly 300 temporary camps, according to a state-run newspaper there. Severe storms have forced a French-American long-distance swimmer to suspend his attempt to become the first person to swim across the Pacific Ocean. Ben LeCompte and the yacht accompanying him have returned to a port in Yokohama, Japan, to wait out the weather. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you're with us. A group of 55 sets of human remains handed over by North Korea last week were transferred Wednesday to U.S. military transport planes at a ceremony in South Korea before flying on to the U.S. state of Hawaii. The ceremony took place Wednesday at Osan Air Base in South Korea. A bagpipe marked the occasion. VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb told our colleague Sarah Williams how the remains will be greeted once they arrive on U.S. soil in Hawaii.
The Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence, will be attending the ceremony at Joint Base Pearl Harbor Hickam in Hawaii. He is actually the son of a Korean War combat veteran, so this means a great deal for him personally. At the ceremony earlier, the commander in charge was saying that this is a cherished duty for Americans and for everybody in those United Nations member states that fought in Korea. He says that it's a commitment that you make from one soldier to another, from one troop to another, to pass on getting the remains of these soldiers for their family members and these service members for their family members.
Well, now this is going to be quite a process to try to identify these remains because I believe, you know, the North Koreans have not supplied that much information.
Exactly, Sarah. So North Korea only provided one single dog tag with the 55 boxes of remains. Normally, when people are trying to identify remains, they use whatever identification is available. They try to use the clothing. They try to use any papers or dog tags. North Korea didn't really provide these to the United States, so they are going to have this long process to try to go through and get DNA samples, mitochondrial DNA samples of these remains, and try to match it with family members of the missing from the United States and around the world. And then that's how they're going to try to go through and send the remains to the proper owners, to the family members that can bury them. This is a laboratory here in Hawaii. This laboratory is well equipped to do this. This laboratory is actually the largest in the world. It's the most diverse with skeletal identification. It's staffed by, oh gosh, I think 30 anthropologists and archaeologists. So it's very well equipped to do so. However, the task is going to be monumental. And a U.S. defense official told me yesterday that this is going to take months, if not years.
There are thousands, we should note, of missing soldiers. That is just of American soldiers from the Korean
Yes.
War. But there also are missing soldiers who are Australians or French. So, it's really not known who these remains could be of.
Absolutely. And Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis was speaking to us at the Pentagon, several of us reporters, and he told us, frankly, we don't know who are in those boxes. It could be anyone from around the world, but he said that this is an international effort to bring closure to these people. I know for the United States, there are 7,700 unaccounted for, and over the years since the 1980s, they have been able to identify about 460, 470 different remains. So this process has been happening before. This is not a first by any means, but it's a long way from completing all and making all of the people who went missing accounted for.
So there's no doubt a number of remains are still in North Korea.
Absolutely. That's what we think. And Secretary Mattis also said that the U.S. and its allies would be looking into going to North Korea to try to search for some more remains in the future.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Australia and Japan have reportedly joined with the United States to create a scheme for investing in countries across Asia and the Pacific in an apparent attempt to counter the growing influence of China. The leader of a South Korean doomsday cult has been arrested for allegedly holding some 400 followers captive on Fiji by subjecting them to violence and barbaric rituals. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. As we continue, we take a look at the financial world. Stocks fell worldwide Wednesday on persistent fears of an escalation of the trade war between the United States and China, although robust results from Apple Incorporated helped cap losses and the Federal Reserve left U.S. interest rates untouched. Apple, which jumped nearly 6% to a record high of $201.76 after predicting a surge in current quarter sales, pulled the NASDAQ into positive territory and lifted the other two major U.S. stock indexes. The Mac and iPhone maker saw its best day since February of 2017. However, market participants said Wednesday's reversal after a recent sell-off of tech shares might not be sustainable as investors turned their attention back to trade disputes. And the Japanese yen strengthened at 0.24% versus the greenback at $111.60 after Tuesday's pledge by the Bank of Japan to keep rates extremely low for an extended period. This news alert from VOA Asia, a new commission set up by Myanmar to look into human rights abuses in Rakhine State has been criticized by observers as a political gimmick as that country tries to stave off further censure over its treatment of Rohingya Muslims. Google has declined to confirm reports it plans to launch a censored version of its search engine in China. This is VOA Asia. UN agencies are urging Indian authorities to ensure that more than 4 million people threatened with statelessness retain their basic rights and access to services while their claims of citizenship are under review. From Geneva, Lisa Schlein reports for VOA.
The UN Refugee Agency says it is too soon to know the implications of India's recent decision to strip more than 4 million people of their citizenship. People threatened with statelessness are those or descendants of those who have arrived in Assam state after March 1971 when Bangladesh became independent. The prospect of what lies ahead is very worrisome for an agency that is campaigning to end statelessness globally for some 10 million people by 2024. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler tells VOA the nationality status of those excluded is not yet clear.
Many may ultimately be declared Indian citizens at the end of this process. At the same time, others may be at risk of statelessness. The process is still underway, and we are appealing to the Indian authorities to ensure that even those who don't qualify for citizenship are not subject to deportation.
Spokesman for the High Commissioner for Human Rights, Ravina Shamdasani, agrees with the UNHCR. It is premature to talk about statelessness. But she tells VOA it is critical for the Indian government to ensure that whatever processes it carries out are done in a transparent and non-discriminatory manner.
There must not be any disenfranchisement. They should ensure that people have access to their basic services, that they're adequately informed about the policies, the situations, and if necessary, they have avenues for legal redress.
The UN agencies say they will be closely monitoring the situation. They are urging the Indian authorities to provide these millions of people living in limbo with all the opportunities and help they need to file their claims for citizenship. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and on SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com, and we'd love to hear from you at VOA Asia Facebook, also our email at voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our affiliate stations, which include Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines, Radioactive at Temasek Polytechnic in Singapore, and Chiang Mai University Radio FM 100, Chiang Mai University in Thailand. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Thomas Blondet, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, consisting of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.